I am Alex Keller.
And I am Mike Harding.
And this is The Filmtastic Voyage.
Welcome, everybody. This is the Filmtastic Voyage. I'm Mike Harding.
I'm not.
I'm Mike, and you're Alex.
Yeah, I'm Alex.
Now, the funny thing is, someone was giving me a little bit of praise today about our show. He's like, hey, I noticed you guys did something right away that was like the right thing to do for a podcast. And you guys don't spend all
was
this...
Was it patting ourselves in the back?
Almost. He was saying... You guys never sit there for like 15 minutes and talk about your personal lives. You know what I mean? You guys never sit there and like say like, oh, I did this and that and that and this. So with that said, Alex, how's everything gone?
Good.
How's work?
It's good. See, that's what it's like to live a day in the life in our shoes. This is what we talk about when we're not in the air. That's how our conversations go.
Yeah. But that's the thing, man. Let's trim the fat. Cut the pork. You know what I mean? Filmtastic Voyage. What, did I say something bad?
No, I just...
That face. It's like, oh, God. But we're here to trim the fat.
It's a weird show about feelings.
Listen, we want to get right into the nitty-gritty. We want to talk some film. Okay, we're here to talk film.
Hardcore film talk. We're talking about Jodorowsky. We're talking about Tarkovsky.
Jeff Goldblum.
Eisenstein.
Channing Tatum.
Yeah, you know.
But that's the thing. We're on a voyage for you.
Through space and time, except it's more like movies in space and time.
That's right. So join us as we go on our first Filmtastic Voyage for this evening. And where are we? Where are we going, Alex?
Well, all right. Well, we kind of briefly touched about this the last episode, and I think we'll go into it this time. 2007's Superbad.
Superbad. Superbad. Oh, yeah. We were talking about this last episode.
Well, last episode, for those who are, following the arcs, the very complicated character arcs that we're on, we talked a little bit about comedy films, our favorite comedy films, Judd Apatow, et cetera, et cetera. And this briefly came up, and now let's talk about it depthly.
Yes, let's be a couple of Johnny Depps and go in depth.
Johnny Depp. Johnny. I love that.
Johnny Depp. So Superbad, I think that was like his Zoso. That was like his Dark Side of the Moon.
You know what? Superbad. It's actually super good.
It is super good. And you know what I like about Judd Apatow's movies? Now, give or take the quality, because there have been some ones where it's like, eh. But what I like is they always market themselves as being really raunchy, right? And that's what gets people to see them. Mm. But by the end of the movie, you learn a really pretty good life lesson.
Yeah. The thing I liked about Superbad is that despite the fact that it was an experience that I never had in high school, that kind of like raucous party, drinking, whatever.
Same here.
Like I was a big fat dork in high school and still am. But
same here.
Well, not as fat now, but still dork. But
same here.
the point of the matter is that I still could relate with the characters. It just seemed like something that like me and my friends were getting into similar hijinks, maybe less police involved, but still it felt really familiar, which I really liked.
Well, I'd say that all four of the two main characters and their gals.
And, McLovin, of course.
Right. They were all dorks trying to be cool. It's like they were all flawed in the eyes of what's the cool thing to do in high school. They were all sort of failing at it, right? Mm. And that's, I think, why we could relate to it. And I think most people, because most people are trying to be cool in high school, and most people don't really do that.
Well, I think, those guys are outsiders, just hang with themselves. It's just the fact that, they were different, up to different kind of shenanigans.
Yeah.
The only person in that movie who is indeed cool, isn't trying to be cool, is probably Emma Stone. First big role, right?
Yeah, that was the first time I saw her in anything. She's still, that's probably the first thing she
was in. Cool. Still is cool.
Oh yeah.
As far as I know.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, like on a personal level?
I don't know.
I'm sure she's cool. Emma Stone, are you cool?
I believe that before the movie, she dyed her hair red to stand out. She's not actually a redhead.
I did not know that.
Yeah, she's like opposite Mary Jane in the first Spider-Man movie.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I did not know that Kirsten Dunst was blonde for the longest time. Because I was like I was 11 or 12 when the Spider-Man movie came out, so I hadn't really seen many Kirsten Dunst movies.
Right, yeah. I'd seen her in, Interview with a Vampire.
Hadn't seen it at the time.
And then wasn't she in Jumanji?
Oh, fuck, yeah, she was. But yeah. As a 12-year-old kid, I'm not making that connection.
Right, yeah, yeah. I remember seeing her in Jumanji, but not really connecting that it was the same person from Spider-Man until much later on, yeah. But the interesting thing about her is, you could sort of tell that she wasn't a natural redhead. And yeah. I don't know what it was, but you could just sort of tell.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
I just didn't think about it. I'm not really, people get weird hang-ups about the colors of people's hair in movies. Especially comic book movies.
Well, with comic book movies, they're always like, gotta make it just like the comic. Come on.
I wonder why that is, though. Why do people care about hair color so much?
I think,
we're talking about the issues here, of course.
Yeah,
serious issues here on Filmtastic Voyage.
I sort of fall into that category a little bit. I feel like, well, if you're depicting this person that's already been visually depicted in some other medium, then you gotta, I don't know, maybe it's up to you to respect it, right? Like, but it depends. Here's a great example. Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
I would be bummed out if he was not blonde hair and blue eyed, because I feel like him being blonde hair and blue eyed and fighting the Nazis was a little bit significant.
Yeah,
was
that
a little bit
true.
Important.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true. Yeah.
But I think it really just depends on how significant it is.
Like
I couldn't picture Wolverine being blonde. That would just be strange.
Like, I can't picture Superman being blonde. At the same time, if he was, I logically have no reason to be upset. Like, it's like, but he's usually got black hair. That's, like, the only thing I could come up with. But it's like, well,
well, here's a great example of people not having a hang-up. Aquaman.
Oh, Aquaman, but Aquaman should... There are too many white guys in the Justice League.
Right.
Make him Samoan like he should be.
Well, and that's the thing. I think a lot of people, including myself, were like, you know what? Aquaman's kind of boring. Why don't we make him cool? So use Jason Momoa, who's already, like, awesome, and he was from Game of Thrones, and, like, let's just mold Aquaman into Jason Momoa.
There's a missed opportunity in the New 52 or Rebirth or whatever. Just make Aquaman like an Islander.
Yeah,
like, just
absolutely.
Do that. Just like, oh, we're doing a reboot. Let's completely change Aquaman. Make him not another white guy.
They should have him match the movie one.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be awesome.
Dude, comic sales would... I bet you anything comic sales would go up if they did
Yeah,
that.
Probably. Yeah. I'm trying to think. So hair representation. We got three black hairs. You got your Wonder Woman. You got your Batman, your Superman. They got their black hair, the jet black hair.
Right.
You got one brown hair in Hal Jordan.
Uh-huh.
You got a blonde in the classical depiction of Aquaman.
Uh-huh.
Who else is there? You got bald in Martian Manhunter.
So
and Cyborg
sort of works.
Yeah. Cyborg is sometimes part of the team, sometimes not. Am I missing? And the Flash, who's blonde? No, he's like right. He's got like light brown hair.
You know, when it comes to
Flash can be blonde.
Yeah, dirty blonde, I guess.
Here's what you do. You got to have your blonde representation. Make the Flash blonde, because he's fast, he's got lightning, blonde hair, makes sense.
DC has always had a real weird problem with that, I think. I don't know. It's like everybody in Batman has black hair. Like, I don't know why. Like, why do all the Robins have black hair? It doesn't matter.
According to Grant Morrison, it's because Batman... Crazily forces everyone to dye their hair black because Batman's a fucking crazy person.
Well, he did that with Jason Todd. I don't know if he did that with anybody else, but yeah, I know what you're saying.
Well, not Damian because that's his son. And
Damian.
They're all the same. It's weird seeing them all together. It's like, ew, they have like the same drawing, just taller than each other.
You know, what bummed me out about Damian, because I was like, oh man, Batman had a son with, Bruce Wayne had a son with Talia al Ghul. And that's like, oh, that's actually like a really cool, like flawed kind of thing. But then they turned it in this weird thing where it was like, he was raised in a lab or some shit, like, or conceived in a lab or something. Was that?
Okay. I don't know.
Like, yeah, was, I'll have to check that again.
He was like,
but...
he was like born, but then like put in a tube or something and aged up just for the timeline purposes.
Okay, but he was conceived by just the two of them banging.
That's
right?
What, as long if I recall Grant Morrison's crazy fucking weirdo story, that's what happened.
Okay, because I would have been bummed out if it was something like, oh, Talia al Ghul stole Bruce Wayne's semen and then made a baby.
Or maybe that happened.
It's like, no.
I don't think so, though.
Well, either way, it should just be Bruce Wayne hooked up with Talia al Ghul. They had a kid, and then now he has to deal with
it. Yeah, but either way, the point of the matter is, why is Batman the all these Robins?
I think...
that's what they should have fixed in New 52. He's just with the one Robin, and that's it.
See, well, that's what I liked about Tim Drake. Was that's his name, right? Tim Drake?
Yeah.
The third one. Because at that point, Jason Todd had been murdered. And Batman was like, never again. I'm never going to have a sidekick ever again. And then Tim Drake came along and he's like, listen, dude, you need a Robin. I'm going to be your Robin. You need me. And then eventually Batman's like, oh, okay. Right?
Yeah. Like, it makes sense. I don't know. Anyways, what were we talking about? Hair color and stuff. So, well, there was some rumors, unconfirmed rumors, that, you know, the actress who's going to play Mary Jane in the new Spider-Man movie has been revealed.
Yeah.
And she's obviously not a redhead.
Right.
And
people, I think that's fine. I think that's great.
I think it's totally cool and awesome.
Yeah.
But, like, people are like, but it's redheaded. But, like, why?
Who cares? We already had it. It doesn't matter.
We already had it. But it was making me think, why does it matter if Mary Jane has red hair? It's like, it's part of her.
It doesn't.
It really doesn't. Like, it's part of her kind of character look, but it's like, why is hair color need to be iconic at all, really?
I think it only matters again if it has something to do with the character, like Wolverine. If they made him blonde, I'd be like, well, guys, I don't know.
Well, it's because he's so hairy, and it kind of, like, it's his silhouette. Like,
it's a part of his iconography, right?
Yeah, well, because, like, he's got, like, the hairy arms. He had blonde hair. You can't see his hairy arms. That's no sense.
Yeah, and I think it only matters if it's a part of, like, if it's significant.
Like I said, like from a character design standpoint, they have to have your strong silhouette. If it affects the silhouette, the hair color somehow affects their silhouette. However, like with Wolverine, like you have to be able to see his hairiness, right? It's kind of part of him,
right? Yeah.
But like, if it's like Mary Jane, like if Gwen Stacy had red hair and Mary Jane had blonde hair, it wouldn't change who they are as characters, and so it really doesn't matter.
I feel like I probably come from a little bit more of a comic purist standpoint than you do, right?
I suppose.
At least with this issue, I would say I'm fine with Mary Jane being a different take on her now, because we already had the Raimi movies and they were already good and they're their own thing. So it's like, why not mix it up, right? If they were to go into, like we were talking about Fantastic Four, remember?
Uh-huh.
And we're talking about, like, well, first you need to make a really successful standard Fantastic Four movie before you can start going off and making all these different takes on it, like body horror and all that shit, right? Uh-huh. And that's sort of how I feel. It's like, well, okay, there's all these expectations because this movie hasn't been adapted before, or the comic hasn't been adapted before. So there's all these expectations that people have where they just want to see, you know, more of a straight adaptation of the comic. Make that first, make it good, and then you can go ahead and do different takes on it.
Yeah,
that's
it's just
how
you know, but like if Sue Storm doesn't have blonde hair, that doesn't change who she is as a character.
No.
Like, you know, like Jessica Alba in a blonde wig looks terrible. Like, they should have just had her have regular hair, and it would have been.
No, I completely agree. Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, it's weird. Like, at the same time, it's like, you know, if you can, like, it's not like I'm saying, oh, all hair color is you shouldn't change it at all. Because, like, you know, Mary Jane does have red hair, and it is part of her general kind of, like, character at a distance, and so like if you can avoid doing that, don't. But like, at the same time, I wouldn't say only like hire people that can pull off red hair if you're doing live action. It's mostly for a live action thing I'm talking about, really.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's like, hire good actresses or actors, doesn't matter what color hair they are, and just have them play the role. If you know, James Bond happens to be a blonde guy, well, whatever.
Yeah,
because we all know how that turned out. Spoilers, excellent.
Yeah, I think I think it really just depends on where you're at with the franchise and with your audience. You know, people get hung up on the stupidest things sometimes for no reason. And you just sort of have to measure it at the time you're doing it. And, yeah. And you got to make sure you're giving people what they theoretically would want to see. That's all.
Yeah. I just always think that like hair color is always like the thing that people go to, whereas this person,
it's a little silly.
This person couldn't be this because hair. Like,
it's a little silly.
Well, like, you know, like Jesse Eisenberg can't be Lex Luthor because he has hair. What? You know.
Well, and we
I
all
mean,
know.
Like, we all know that we turned out. That. But that was what the original argument. I remember seeing.
Well, like Gene Hackman had hair.
Well, like I remember seeing like, you know, that. And then like when he showed, they showed the picture of him with the shaved head. And was like, oh, now I see. It's like, it doesn't matter. He's an actor. He just shaves his head. Like Lex Luthor should be bald, obviously.
I think more than anything, they just have to have a likeness to the character. And I think whatever that likeness is, people won't tear apart these details. Like Daniel Craig as James Bond is a great example where it's like, okay, the movie speaks for itself. He's a great James Bond. So then people are like, oh yeah, he's blonde. And I don't care. Right.
Yeah. But at the same time, I'm thinking like, what if the Joker didn't have green hair? That just wouldn't work.
It'd be a little strange. Yeah. Or if he didn't have his lipstick, you know?
Yeah. Well, like, so, he kind of does for a second in The Dark Knight Returns. But he puts it back on.
Right.
I don't know. Like, it's like, I understand the argument. Like, hair is very important in terms of sort of the general character's color design. So it's hard to get rid of. I don't know. It's just sort of, it just seems like it's just odd to me. That's the first thing that people always go to when they nitpick something visually is hair color. And I don't know why. I'm just trying to figure it out.
Like, I think there's a difference between, let's say, Jean Grey's red hair and Mary Jane's red hair. I think if you were to make Jean Grey not a redhead, you're taking away from Jean Grey's character.
Yeah. See, I don't get why it makes a difference. That's like, it's just an interesting thought experiment. Point of the matter is, it's all good.
Yeah. What, I've forgotten what movie we're talking about.
Well, the real thing, what I'm trying to get at is that Emma Stone Super looks bad. Really good with red hair.
That's right. Okay.
And that she was blonde in Spider-Man. Shailene Woodley got cut out of that movie. Poor Shailene Woodley. She's just getting, with the Divergent movies getting canceled all over the place, poor her.
Oh, that's right.
And now she's protesting stuff at that thing.
Okay, she was going to be Mary Jane in, like, Spider-Man, in two, Amazing Spider-Man 3, though?
Yeah, probably.
Okay, yeah, I forgot about that.
But anyway, let's go back to Superbad, just because.
Yeah, okay, so Superbad was good.
So, Superbad's a good movie, good high school movie. Do you have any other favorite high school movies?
Favorite high school
Goosebumps,
movies?
Perhaps?
Goosebumps was great. Hey, Goosebumps, that kid from Goosebumps, he's hitting some home runs.
He's like 30. He's like 30 years old.
Is he 30?
He's not high schooler, though.
He's probably like 25, though, huh?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, definitely.
His friend, though, that kid was probably in high school.
Oh, he's probably like 22. Maybe he's like 24, could play younger. You know how some people can do that.
Yeah, yeah. Haley Joel Osment.
Ralph Macchio, whatever his name is.
Macchio.
He's playing a high school student into his 30s.
High school movies? You know what one of my favorite high school movies is? Napoleon Dynamite.
That's actually a good one. I like that movie.
And no, that actually legitimately is one of my favorite movies.
That was a movie that stands, it's a good movie that just is people that make it bad.
And those kids in that movie were definitely not high school age. Those kids, Napoleon, John Heder was probably like 28 when he did that movie.
I remember seeing a trailer for some movie. It's like, I think it was I Love You, Beth Cooper, that Christopher Columbus movie. Or Chris Columbus, excuse me. Christopher Columbus was the sailor.
Yeah.
That the main character was like 40 years old. I don't know if he actually was, but I remember seeing that trailer and it's like, who's this fucking 40-year-old hanging out with these
It's called I Love You,
Beth Cooper? I don't remember.
Okay.
It's got Hayden Panettiere in it.
Okay.
Whatever her name is. And it's some high school movie that's supposed to be terrible. And I just remember seeing the trailer and being like, how old is this guy?
Right, yeah.
And I think Cameron from Ferris Bueller's in it, someone was telling me.
Sure. I've never seen
it. That's a good high school movie.
So, okay, yeah.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Yeah, that's a classic.
Yeah.
What makes a good high school movie?
I think it has to be relatable to both high schoolers and adults. You have to be like,
yeah,
you have to
maturity.
Look, you gotta look back at it and be like, oh, I remember when I was there. And if you're high school, you'd be like, oh, right, this is like my life.
Yeah, and you know, like, between the beginning of the movie and the end of the movie, maybe they're like, They're sort of like, you know, more adolescent in the they're sort of like more childish in the beginning, and then by the end they're like, hey, we're closer to being adults, you guys.
Yeah, that's the Breakfast coming of Club. Age. Yeah, Breakfast Club. I think good high school movies have that hint of like really sad maturity to them. Like even Superbad's like, deals with, like, we're drifting apart as friends. Like, you're going to college, I'm going to a different college, we're splitting up.
Right.
This is the end of the trio or whatever.
Right, yeah, that's true. So they have to, like,
deal with that.
And Napoleon Dynamite, I mean, you know, dealing with diversity and, like, you know, having to conquer the cool kids and stuff. Yeah, that was pretty weird serious shit, yeah. Jamiroquai music in the third act.
Great scene.
You know, that movie started my Jamiroquai collection. I was like, damn, Jamiroquai is pretty awesome.
They are pretty awesome.
And then I started listening to Jamiroquai a bunch.
It's always funny when, like, one thing from a movie or something will, like, get you hooked.
Mm-hmm.
I remember most of the bands I listened to, like half of the bands I listened to, I should say, I only know because I played Guitar Hero.
Oh, okay. Well, but, I mean, that makes sense, though, right?
Yeah.
Because that game, I think, is sort of... That was a clever game in the sense that it sort of reinvigorated an interest for rock music.
Especially classic rock.
Yeah, but I mean, it's all the interest is dead now, again. But, you know, for a little while, it was like, oh, it was really cool. Like, you know, running into... Suddenly, everybody knew who
Heart.
Heart was again.
I'm just like, that's the first one that came to my head.
Yeah, a cool idea for a video game.
Yeah, great idea. Great video game. Yeah, Jamiroquai.
Jonah Hill. Apparently he was, I think he was like 22 when he did Superbad.
He was in his 20s, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember thinking like, damn, that guy's in his 20s? Because he totally looked like a kid.
I remember seeing him in Accepted. A couple years before that, and being like, that guy's funny.
Accepted is the one with...
Justin Long, I think.
Long, okay. And he sets up
and makes his own fake college.
Oh, it's a pretty good
movie.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good movie.
Yeah, okay.
I recall. And
Justin Long, dude, that guy just came and went.
I think he's married to Drew Barrymore now. That guy's also like 40 years old.
Wait, Justin Long is married to Drew Barrymore?
I believe so.
They probably met on that one movie.
Yeah, maybe even before that.
He's Just Not That Into You. You remember that movie?
No. I wasn't. I guess I wasn't into it.
It's one of your classic rom-coms,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I know of it. Isn't that one of those ensemble movies where it's got like every A-list actor and actress in Hollywood?
Yeah, it has Jennifer Connelly in it. It has Justin Long, has Drew Barrymore. Has Bradley Cooper.
It's a pool of talent.
What's her face? you know, damn it. Black Widow.
Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson. Yeah, that was a weird one.
I always wanted to put, I think in posters they should put, I'd love to see on posters where they have, not the actor's name, but what role they play. It's like, Black Widow is Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be pretty great.
That would be that would be an interesting thing.
Anyway, so yeah, I'm trying to think of other good high school movies. Was the 80s like there weren't really high school movies until the no actually, American Graffiti.
American Graffiti was pretty good. Yeah, that was a good one.
That's a
now
high
wasn't
movie.
That sort of done on a like because I remember hearing a story where everybody was like, George Lucas can only do sci-fi. He doesn't know how to do anything else. And he's like, well, fuck you guys. I'm going to do American Graffiti, bitches.
Yeah, basically.
And then he made American Graffiti.
Something like that. Folks, if you doubt George Lucas's ability as a director, go watch American Graffiti.
It's a good movie.
You know, a nominee for Best Picture, 1970, whatever.
And I'm pretty sure he did not want to use Harrison Ford as Han Solo at first because he had used him in American Graffiti.
He wanted all unknowns and quickly realized that Han Solo is pretty great. Or Han Solo. Harrison Ford is pretty great.
You should go up to Harrison. Hey, if anybody sees Harrison Ford, go ahead and go up to him and call him Han Solo, see what he does.
He'll strangle you to death right there in the street. He'll choke you out. And no, everyone will just keep walking. That's real power.
Yeah, that is real power.
If you want to get a grumbling of your lifetime, you call Harrison Ford Indiana Jones to his face.
I want to get, you know what? I want to get him in a room with Dennis Quaid. And Nick Nolte.
I want him, and also
and I just
want
to hear a bunch of growling.
Directed by Clint Eastwood.
Yeah,
it's a hardcore dark reboot of Grumpy Old Men.
Yeah,
where they're just
in a room.
Oh, Tommy Lee Jones also.
Oh yeah, Tommy Lee. Well, Tommy Lee Jones. I mean, he's in a league of his own. That guy.
It's just gravel and grumble till the sun comes up.
I think Tommy Lee Jones, out of all those actors. I don't know about Clint. Yeah, I'll just go ahead and say it. I think Tommy Lee Jones is the most redeemable out of all those actors.
Redeemable how?
I think he's presented the best acting.
He's the best actor of the group. Yes, yeah. I will say that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd like to see Tommy Lee Jones and Clint Eastwood and Harrison Ford and et al. In a movie. I want to make they'll also star in a movie just called Not Having It.
I'm not having it. What do you want to do? I don't know. Fuck it.
No, they just go out and they watch these kids, these millennials. They're just like, I don't understand kids.
Yeah, fucking millennials. Fucking
kids. Get off my lawn, you kids.
That'd be a great movie.
That'd be pretty
great. They should make that movie now before it's too late.
Is Tommy Lee Jones capable of starring in a comedy? Like,
I think
he's been in comedies, but...
Yeah, Batman Forever.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I mean, he was in like that one comedy where he like saved a bunch of cheerleaders or something.
Was it MIB? No.
Man of the House, I think.
Never.
He was in Men in Black. That's technically a comedy.
Sort of
he's
a sci-fi comedy, yeah.
He's funny in those. He's kind of good comedies. Strange, like, it's weird. Men in Black 3, he kind of just like, I'm just going to leave this movie.
Men in Black 3 was a weird movie.
And he kind of came back. It's the second best Men in Black movie.
Which is
saying something.
Yeah, it was redeemable. It had some redeemable qualities.
It was okay.
I thought it was better than the second, yeah.
Yeah, that first one's a gem, a shiny gem.
It's always interesting running into these trilogies where you come to the conclusion that, you know what, they probably just sort of stuck with the first one.
And that's
one of those.
I want that Men in Black 22 Jump Street crossover to happen so badly.
Is it not going to happen anymore?
I don't know what's the deal with it, but if it should, because like Men in Black needs a boost in the arm. That's a franchise, like... It's a franchise. I don't want it to disappear. I don't really want to see it get rebooted because it's such a great premise. Because like the problem with doing a reboot, it's like I don't want to see that shit again. I just kind of want them to jump into it.
Yeah.
So if you did Men in Black, you just have to jump into it, but then like be like, oh, we can't do that. People are going to get confused or whatever. So you couldn't do that. But like at the same time, I'd also like to see the 22 Jump Street kind of has nowhere else to go because they kind of did that and they played out the sequel jokes in the credits.
Yeah. So now they could do the crossover.
So if
jokes.
They did the crossover, it'd be the best of both worlds. It'd be amazing.
Yeah. No, I agree. They should do it.
Yeah. But, you know, there's probably rights issues. Or maybe whoever Sony just doesn't want the money.
They're just like, ah, fuck it.
There's just piles of money they just don't want. I'm sure also, well, it's hard to say. Because I imagine probably being in that scenario where everyone on the internet thinks it's good, but everyone on the internet's like five people.
Yeah.
Because in the same way that everyone on the internet was like, oh my God, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World looks so amazing. Well, let's all go see it. And everyone on the internet did, and it made like $40 million, and it was a big failure.
And you know what? I hate to say it, everybody. But internet opinions seemingly don't really count for much.
Unfortunately, yeah.
It seems like it's largely ignored by the people that have a lot of money that are making the decisions.
Also, I want to say, not sorry, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, fucking great movie.
It's a great movie, yeah. No, I am waiting for the next movie. The next Edgar Wright movie.
Okay, I thought you were talking about next Scott Pilgrim. It's like,
That'd be great. No, that'd be great.
Mike, I hate to tell you this, but it's kind of based on the entire series of books. There's nothing else to adapt.
No. I want another Edgar Wright movie, and I don't understand why there's not one.
It's coming out next year, Baby Driver. Or maybe it's 2 years. Baby Driver. It's happening.
Okay. Because it's been a while,
It's been since 2012?
Well, because I guess he was working on Ant-Man.
And then he quit.
But then he quit. No. Scott Pilgrim was 2010.
No, I'm talking about
The World's End. That's right. Yeah, The World's End was
2012, 2013, something like that.
Whatever year This Is the End came out.
I think 2013.
Yeah, I think it was 2013 because This Is the End and The World's End came out the same summer.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay.
I have trouble, actually. I think I like, that's a tough one. Those are both really good movies. I try to think which one's better, but they're both really great for different reasons.
Yeah.
Hard to say. What were we talking about, Superbad?
Well, there's Judd Apatow, Superbad. We're talking about hair color.
Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford and the Grumbly crew.
Anyways, I think that's about... I think it's time to go to another movie.
I think so. Superbad's good, everybody. You should go see it. 40-Year-Old Virgin, that's another good Judd Apatow one. Geeks and Freaks, hey, that's where they
freaks
all start.
And geeks.
Freaks and Geeks. Yeah, you see? Freaks and Geeks, that's another good Judd Apatow production.
I mean, speaking of high school movies, we talked about it last week, I'll say it again, Edge of 17, very good movie.
Yeah.
You know, anything John Hughes, classic, etc.
Napoleon Dynamite, that's a realistic one.
Home Alone, that's a John Hughes movie.
Home Alone, yeah, that's he's gonna be in high school after that movie.
Yeah, so. It's weird actually. People tend to forget that Home Alone scored by John Williams.
I forgot that.
See, yeah,
that's weird. That's very weird.
Like, I like it's yeah, it's one of his forgotten. Like, people are like, oh shit, like everyone's like, oh, John Williams did this, this, and this. And no one's ever like, oh, right, he did Home Alone too. Remember Home Alone? Because like, no, that's got a really good score. It's not really quite memorable. I can't really conjure it at the top of my head, but it's a strong John Williams score.
And here's a hard pill to swallow. Joe Pesci didn't really do much in the way of movies after Home Alone. He did a Lethal Weapon. What, three and four, four, three, four or something?
Was that before or after? Was Home Alone before or after My Cousin Vinny?
I don't know.
It might be in the same year. It was like right 90, around the same 93 time. Maybe? 93, yeah. 94? No, I think Home Alone's 94. So it was a year, I think.
It was before.
He was filming My Cousin Vinny while Goodfellas was out, because I remember hearing that he brought his Oscar to set, being like, I won this, I'm Joe Pesci.
Okay.
Look how great he is. And then I'm sure Marissa Tomei was like, later, like, now I have an Oscar for this movie. Winning an Oscar for a comedy, by the way, is no small feat.
Dude, by the way, she's going to be Aunt May in Spider-Man. I am looking forward to that. I only have one Hollywood crush, Alex.
Really?
Marissa Tomei.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Now I know.
Now everybody knows. Okay, let's go to the next. Let's go to the next film planet.
Hey, I'm liking the sound of this one. Speaking of Marissa Tomei, where it's not related at all, Mad Max Fury Road.
Now, that was almost a flawless movie. It would have been flawless if Marissa Tomei was in it, though. Am I right?
Yeah, exactly. You could say the same about every movie, virtually.
So that was what came up, Mad Max Fury Road.
Yep.
We haven't really spent much time talking about Mad Max at all.
All right, now as is tradition, list them, rank them.
Oh, rank them.
Rank them.
Okay, I think most people will agree with this ranking. First and foremost, the best of them, Mad Max Fury Road.
Agreed.
Second best, The Road Warrior. Third best, Mad Max. Fourth best, Beyond Thunderdome.
I'm disagreeing with you hardcore there, man.
Really? Okay.
Thunderdome, leagues better than the first one.
Leagues. Those two...
Streets ahead.
Now, I will say those two are sort of a tie for me.
The thing about...
It like, switches.
See, here's the thing about like about Beyond Thunderdome. Beyond Thunderdome has a very established... It has that... It's like... Road Warrior is great. Warrior is second best, obviously. But the Beyond Thunderdome really like takes that post-apocalypse aesthetic and kind of like finally like gets it.
Fleshes out the
like,
world.
Fleshes it
yeah.
out. Everyone's wearing hockey pads or whatever. Everyone's wearing hockey pads. And
for half the movie, I'd
yeah,
say
for
that.
Half, like,
yeah,
that Thunderdome half of the movie is like
great.
Great, spectacular, amazing. And then he gets caught with a bunch of kids and it kind of like slows down.
That's where it... See, and I would agree. Like the first half of that movie is awesome. I'd say the first half of that movie is much better than the first Mad Max movie.
Yeah.
Obvious, like, by leaps and bounds, right? But then the second half of Beyond Thunderdome, it makes me want to kill myself.
See, it's a bunch of kids and stuff, but that train sequel, that train escape is all right. It's a little weird that, like, why it happens, but it's a good chase. The reason that the movie might not be the best is because George Miller kind of only like half directed it.
He left, right?
Like, he was like, his friend died. He was kind of like, I'm just going to like do the action sequences and you, this other guy, you can do the rest. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what was the name of those two? There was the really big guy and then on top of him was a little...
Master and Blaster?
Master Blaster, yeah. Now, maybe you can explain this to me because I was very confused. When they go back to Thunderdome, they rescue Master?
Yeah.
Even though he
yeah,
is
that's why I was confused.
Villain?
And he puts on a little suit.
And he puts on a little suit, and he's like a good guy now. But I don't understand why. Like, why did he switch?
I don't know. I think, well, I guess if I had to guess, because I've only seen the movie once, so, but maybe that, was it Auntie? What was the name of the leader?
I don't remember.
Or who was, you know...
Tina Turner.
Tina Turner's character. Yeah. I think it was like Master Blaster was controlling the oil or the gas or the methane, right?
Uh-huh.
And like he was like, and it's like, we got to get this guy because he's a shit. But then like, maybe you realize that, no, actually, Tina Turner's the big asshole in the movie.
Oh.
And like he's like, you know, keeping things in check or something.
He's just the bruiser.
He's like, you know, because he's like pulling a fast one on Tina Turner because she sucks. But I don't really remember.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm completely wrong. All I remember is that the gyrocopter captain, played by Bruce Spence,
uh-huh.
is in the movie as a different character, also with a gyrocopter, and it's very confusing.
Oh. Wait, so he was...
He's a gyrocopter. He flies a fucking helicopter in 2 and 3 is different people.
Okay. That's interesting. That makes sense because I remember seeing that in both movies. The same dude. Yeah.
Yeah. And he also plays the, I don't know, one of the aliens of Utapau in episode 3.
Oh, Utapau.
Yeah. And he also plays the mouth of Sauron in the extended cut of Lord of the Rings.
Oh, okay. I still haven't seen that, but I heard about it.
Oh, yeah. He plays a big mouth.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty okay. cool.
Now, Utapau, is he the dude that was like, hey, General Grievous is here?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That guy's cool.
Yeah, he's cool. Yeah. Cool guy. I want to see more of those guys in the live action universe. Those guys are sweet.
So for anybody that, because I imagine most people out there, especially our age, have really only seen Mad Max Fury Road. I'm just assuming that.
It's the most recent movie, and it's like, you know, it's on everyone's mind. I assume that if people haven't, it'd probably be people, if they haven't seen that, they've seen Road Warrior, and that's probably like the level of.
Yeah.
I think most people that I know have definitely seen Fury Road, and then second most probably have seen Road Warrior, and then probably not as many people have seen the first or third one.
I know this is hardly comparable. But when you think of Mad Max, who do you think of?
I guess Tom Hardy, just because it was more recent.
Okay.
And because I've only really seen every movie once. So, and like, that was like throughout years. Like, I saw I saw Thunderdome a few weeks before Fury Road, and then Fury Road. And just because I've seen Fury Road half a dozen times since then, I've seen more Mad Max movies total with Tom Hardy as Mad Max.
Yeah.
Than as with Mel Gibson.
Although it doesn't really feel like, you know, sometimes when there's recastings, it feels very different. I didn't really get that from the two of them. And mainly it's probably because of the nature of the narrative and how he doesn't really have much in the way of, you know, emoting anyways, right? So, like, it's probably not a far cry to, like, replace him.
Kind of when I picture Mad Max, when you kind of say Mad Max, what ponders the Eidos of Mad Max that pops into my head is kind of just, like, the generic character they designed for the video game, the Mad Max video game that came out last year.
Oh, okay. Was that good?
I didn't play it.
Okay.
It was supposed to be pretty good. It was kind of okay. I hear it has a lot of the problems that a lot of games have nowadays, where it's like, there's like a bunch of flags everywhere, and you just have to like get a bunch of stuff.
Oh, I see.
One of that kind of stuff, you know, where it's like really spread out. I hate that shit.
Right,
but,
yeah.
Like, he's just kind of like, you know, like a Australian dude with a beard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, that's kind of what I think of.
When I think of Mad Max, I picture more just the world than really just him. You know?
I picture the jacket. And like a bunch of sand.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the car, of course.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I guess when I found out that Mad Max Fury Road was coming out eventually, and this was even before there was any trailers for it or anything, I started watching the series, right? The old
Mad Max, the animated series?
Well, the old movie series.
That would be, if Genndy Tartakovsky made a Mad Max animated series, that would be the best thing in the history of the world.
Maybe.
What do you mean maybe?
Maybe. I mean, I love him. I love everything he does.
Well, he's
but
like the
he's
best
I think he's already done that, though,
he
right?
He did the Clone
like
Wars.
Samurai Jack.
Well,
like,
I'm just saying, because he's the best action animator director currently working in kind of series format.
I suppose so, yeah.
I mean, like, there are other guys, but they tend to be more anime-esque. I'm like, he's like more cartoonish. I think his style would benefit a Mad Max thing as opposed to more of an anime aesthetic.
I suppose, yeah, I could picture that. I mean, I would definitely be thrilled if he did it, you know what I mean? Because
you know that the cars would be drawn and not computers.
Right.
Not a bunch of computers.
Yeah. That would be cool, though, and I think if they're not going to do another movie, they got to do something.
Well, they're probably going to. It's just George Miller's 70. He's probably taking a break after his bushels of success he had with the last movie. At least critical success, maybe not so much financial success.
Really?
It wasn't.
It didn't do well?
It did fine. It didn't do great. Like, it wasn't breaking records. It made its money back and then some, but it wasn't making breaking records. It's not like.
Okay.
Like, it costs so much to make that I'm sure Warner Bros. Isn't like, oh, we have to get on this one.
Oh, I see. Because it costs like $250 million.
It costs
right?
a lot. And also, everyone, here's the thing, a fun tip. That movie was reshot up the asshole. That was a big, troubled production. They were filming that movie in 2012. That's when they started filming that movie.
Wow.
I was hearing about, oh, they're filming Mad Max Fury Road in 2012. And then, like, I just hear, like, oh, it's in trouble. Oh, it's in trouble. Oh, it's in trouble. Actually, it might be really good. And
I mean,
then it came out in May of 2015. And, like, Whoa, holy fuck, it's amazing.
I mean, just the things they had to do, like, you know, I heard, like, they had, like, cameras on all of the cars, like a ton of cameras on all the cars, and, like, they had to sort through just a bunch of, like, you know, 1,600 hours of footage and shit. It was crazy.
Well, here's the thing. So anytime anyone's like, oh, my God, can you believe they're reshooting insert movie here? Don't worry about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Usually it's for the better.
Right. Yeah.
Usually.
So
also every movie has reshoots, but they just don't talk about them.
Well, yeah. Yeah. It seems to be a dirty word, even though people don't realize it.
Well, that's like the thing. If you look at like the amazing Lord of the Rings behind the scene footage, they're like a whole part about how they do reshoots where they like a year after they finish filming, like, okay, let's get fucking Elijah Wood back here to film one thing. We built like a little square of swamp in the backyard of the studio just to have him film this one pickup.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's always reshoots. You know, it's I think it's rare, especially with big blockbuster movies. It's I think it would be bad if there wasn't.
Reshoots make movies better.
Yeah.
A movie that doesn't have any reshoots is more troubling because it means like, oh shit, we didn't shoot this one shot. Well, I guess we're fucked.
Well, and it means that they're being lazy with their notes, right? It's like, okay, so you shoot all this stuff, you get it back. Some stuff is working, some stuff is not. If you choose to not make it better, then the movie's going to be weaker.
Also, there's so many moving parts in a movie that if it all works perfectly out of the gate, that's incredibly lucky.
Because
like certain performances, you had certain things come out, like a character, like an actor might bring life to a character you didn't expect, and then it's like, oh, we should do a rewrite, do this scene differently now that we have like this perspective on who this person is because we didn't expect that with the actor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah.
With Mad Max, I guess I watched it in order. I watched no, that's not true. Oh no, yeah, it is true. Yeah, so I just watched the first one, the second one, the third one, the fourth. The first one's silly.
It's a cheesy B movie. I didn't really like it that much.
The first one, you could tell that they had a shoestring budget. You know, it's like they sort of had like $10 and like their friends to make this movie.
Well, the thing I didn't like, well, the first one was just it's you know, there's still roads and stuff. Like it kind of makes sense in terms of like the chronology, I suppose you could say, because it's like,
I think
each movie gets progressively more weird and like post-apocalyptic.
I think that was an afterthought, though.
That's probably an afterthought.
Honestly.
Yeah.
I think they had roads in the first movie because they couldn't really afford to not have roads in the first movie. You know what I mean?
But it's just a weird B movie. Just sort of it is what it is, and I didn't care for it. But I would say the second movie, the difference in quality between the first and second movie is the steepest jump I've ever seen in a sequel movie.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Which isn't to say that the original Mad Max is like dog shit or something. It's just like it is what it is. But the second movie, that's like amazing.
Yeah. I remember, I think I was even just sort of, I was sort of cracking up a little bit when I started the second one because it was like, it was going through all this stuff that happened between the first movie and the second. And it was just like this like vertical jump, you know what I mean? It was like, this happened in the first movie, but then all this shit happened. It was like, oh God, shit, holy shit.
Well, it's weird also because like the first movie is like, it doesn't really touch on the post-apocalyptic nature, like the lack of gas or the nuclear fallout. Like that's all just like,
it's just like, oh, this is a shitty place.
Yeah, we just live in a shitty place now. And then like, the second movie is like they do the intro. It's like, oh, by the way, the world's been fucked. We forgot to tell you last time. There's no gasoline either.
Yeah.
It's kind of important. We should probably mention that.
Right. Which is funny because it seems like it's a very vehicle heavy franchise, but I don't know how they're powering their cars.
I mean, with all the sun, they should really invest in solar power.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, the third one was great up until the weird kids. It should just, Beyond Thunderdome shouldn't have been its name. It should have just been called Mad Max Meets the Weird Kids. And then,
well, he goes Beyond Thunderdome.
Right. Yeah.
Well, the movie should have been, it's just Mad Max Thunderdome where he's just hanging out in Thunderdome.
Yeah. That should have been it. That should have been the whole movie.
I mean, like what I understand is the original concept was a weird, in the post-apocalypse, a guy meets a tribe of weird kids. And then George Miller's like, say we could take Mad Max and put him in this situation.
Right, yeah.
And that's how that kind of came to be. So that was the genesis of the movie.
Oh, okay.
But it would have been better if it was Babe.
Okay, and then George Miller took a break from the Mad Max.
Yeah, was going to direct the Justice League before the writer's strike.
Did Babe in the Big City or whatever the fuck that was.
Both Happy Feet movies, which kind of helped pay for
Mad
Max. Well, I mean, like, that was like, because Mad Max was originally going to be around 2000, 2001 is when they were going to start shooting. And then 9/11 put a big wrench in that. And so he's like, you know what? I'll just do this fun anime movie about a bunch of penguins.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Because he couldn't get financing anymore or something because, you know, the American dollar took a bit of a dip.
Yeah, yeah.
Or something. I was reading an interview. And then that was a big success with he won his first Oscar or only Oscar with that.
For Happy Feet?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah.
It's weird when live action directors win Oscars for animated movies, like Gore Verbinski, who deserves an Oscar.
Uh-huh.
But like, it was weird they won it for Rango.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, that's good. It's just sort of strange that... It's like hotshot Hollywood director comes in and like kicks all these animators in the balls and like steals their Oscar from them.
Rango, you know, honestly, it seems like it's a very divisive movie amongst animators.
I love it.
But I love it. Yeah, I thought Rango was an amazing movie, and I wish that more movies took a little lesson from Rango.
I wish more animated movies were made by Industrial Light and Magic.
Yeah, because they had this whole aesthetic going where it was very like rendered, realistic looking cartoon animals.
It was simultaneously ugly and beautiful at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. But then after that movie came out, it's like, okay, it made a little bit of a splash, and then everybody just went back to really cutesy stuff.
Well, actually, Industrial Light and Magic did make a second animated movie that was released in January that is a shitty musical. I think it might have been, it was produced by George Lucas, and I can't remember, it came out, it was like Strange Magic, that's what it was called, because it had the ELO song in it. I saw the trailer, and I was like, oh man, like this is what they're doing now?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was really disappointed that they followed up Rango with this direct-to-DVD quality.
I heard it was really, really not that good.
I heard it was the most beautiful direct-to-DVD quality movie in the world.
Better than Food Fight, or whatever that was?
Well, that movie is... Not a movie.
I've yet to see Food Fight.
I don't want to.
Yeah. I'm curious, though. For anybody who doesn't know, Food Fight was this... it was originally going to be a high-budget, kind of Who Framed Roger Rabbit take on, like, brand-name cartoon characters. Like the Tuna Fish Tuna guy.
Yeah, huh?
And, like, all these different cartoon brand... Food brand characters, right? And it was going to be that world... What happened was, and this is all just rumor, but a disgruntled employee stole the entire movie. So then they were stuck having to be like, well, shit, all our budget's gone and we have to do this movie now. So then they did like some really weird looking low res mocap version of it. And then that's how Food Fight was.
Well, first of all, if your movie exists in one location, it's not that high budget. And second of all, for kids at home, if anything that you own that's important to you doesn't exist in three locations,
right?
It doesn't exist at all. It might as well be gone.
Yeah, because you never know. Yeah, I mean, we've worked in places where it's like, it's so easy if someone wanted to just to fuck up the entire server with all the shit on it.
But except at the same time, the places I work on also take home a backup copy of the entire server every night.
And that's what they do, and that's what they should do. Yeah, but I guess this place didn't.
Yeah.
So, lesson learned.
Did you ever hear that time that Toy Story 2 almost got deleted?
No.
Someone, I'm not naming names.
Yeah.
Because I don't really know.
Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks accidentally deleted all of Toy Story 2 off of Pixar's servers while it was in production.
Wow.
And the only reason it was saved because one of the employees who was, I think, had a baby at the time, was working at home, and said that she had a backup of the entire server.
Oh, wow.
And if it wasn't for her, the entire movie would have been lost.
My God.
It was some weird command, like a weird programming error where it like... started deleting files automatically, like it like was looking for files and like couldn't find them, and then just went crazy and just deleted everything, and then everyone's like, oh fuck. But thankfully that one woman had a hero of Pixar,
yeah,
Pixar history had
they
the movie
should give
back.
Her $1 million.
Oh, I'm sure they gave her a cake at least.
Yeah,
Toy Story 2 is a weird movie. That's a movie that shouldn't be nearly as good as it is, just based on its production history, because it was like being scrapped entirely because it was not being made by Disney yet, actually. It was being made by some other people or something. And then Pixar was like, not being made by Pixar.
Right, yeah.
And Pixar was like, no, this is our movie. We'll make it right.
Yeah.
And so they.
Well, I heard 3 was like that too, wasn't it?
Yeah, a bit. I've heard that too. But anyways, the 2, they were like, we're going to do it right. And so then they made that movie in like 9 months.
Well, yeah, because I remember Toy Story 1 came out in 95.
Yeah.
And then Bug's Life came out in 98. And then Toy Story 2 came out in 99, right?
Yeah.
So it seemed like it would. Yeah, it seemed like they had no time to make that movie. Because that was back when. I mean, now they do like movie after movie, year after year, but they have these projects in the works for like 5 years at a time.
Yeah, well, also, I'm sure Pixar's staff is probably 5 times as large.
Oh, yeah.
Sure, nowadays, if not larger.
Like I
they're working on multiple movies at once.
I heard that they had started developing Brave, for example, back in like 98.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
WALL-E was part of, like, the original pitch meeting.
That was part of the original
like four thing, or five movies they wanted to make. WALL-E was one of them. Like, you know, movies like that are forever. Wreck-It Ralph was a pitch in the '80s, from what I understand.
Wow. So back when Sonic the Hedgehog was just a little glimmer in Sega's eye.
Yeah, when arcade games was significant and actually relevant, they were like, we should make an arcade game movie. And that the idea was being kicked around until Wreck-It Ralph actually became made.
Oh, I see.
I believe. I think this is based on like the DVD or something behind the scenes. Someone correct me if I'm wrong.
Uh-huh.
Always please correct me if I'm wrong.
It's interesting, you know, putting ideas, coming up with ideas, then putting them on the shelf, and then revisiting them like 20 years later. And you know what I mean? It's funny how some projects have that lifespan.
I mean, like Luc Besson's new movie, he's been wanting to make that for like 20 years, right?
Probably. Probably
Valerian
ever since Fifth Element,
right? And the Super Planets explosion.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I'm glad that I want to see him do sci-fi again because
he's
really so good
fun.
At it.
Well, I don't think the Fifth Element's that good.
Hey, listen, man.
It's visually...
TBS really, really swayed my opinion on Fifth Element.
Why? Because it would force it down your throat every day?
I will. Well, okay. Here's the thing. I'll just come out and say it. If you're looking for your perfect 90s sci-fi, what I mean by that is like, hey, if you're looking for sci-fi that screams 90s attitude, Fifth Element.
I think The Matrix is pretty sci-fi 90s.
Well, it is, yeah.
I was talking about this to you about this the other day. I was like thinking, like, I'd like if they remade The Matrix or rebooted it or whatever, I guess it could happen because there's still a lot to go. But at the same time, The Matrix is such a 90s thing, it couldn't really work anymore. Like the cyberpunk aesthetic, it's like with the trench coats and the glasses, like that's such a 1998-99 thing.
What's interesting about the 90s is I feel like there's multiple movies made in 99, for example, I think are different than movies like there's like that mid 90s feel, right? Mm. Where everything's just bright orange and bright blue and orange and fucking you're drinking juicy juice and like playing basketball, right? And then there's like 98, 99 where it was like just this weird little different 90s. Like, I agree, Matrix is definitely a 90s movie, but it's a different 90s movie.
You got
movie.
Like the dark 90s.
It's like dark
like
90s,
Fight
yeah.
Club and...
It's like post-Limp Bizkit 90s. You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm sorry, you were in the middle of saying something.
Basically, I was saying, like, if they made The Matrix nowadays, or they rebooted or remade or did another sequel of The Matrix somehow, I don't know. You couldn't have people running around in trench coats with glasses anymore. It wouldn't work because that style has gone from cool to stupid.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, it's totally dated. Yeah.
So I'm like, it's like, I don't think The Matrix as a series could work anymore. That's mostly what I was telling.
Matrix as a series, I feel like if you just stripped down that concept and made it a movie and it was about The Matrix, you can make it. You just can't have people that are dressed in trench coats killing people for no reason and mumbling and never making jokes and never smiling. You know what I mean? It's like you'd have to dress it up differently and actually have these people, like, for example, act like actual human beings.
Well, I just feel like the whole cyberpunk, like, oh, I'm a badass hacker. Like, that kind of thing just doesn't – it feels so – 90s.
Yeah.
Like,
Hackers is a 90s thing.
Yeah, well,
it seems like.
Not the movie necessarily, but the Hackers. Well, I mean,
well, the movie too.
There's
yeah.
still Hackers, like Black Hat or whatever the fuck that movie was.
Yeah, but like, it was different. you know.
Like, there were still hackers, you know, doing...
Was that good, by the way?
I never saw it. Yeah. I mean, like, there's tons of hackers. There's more hackers nowadays than there were in the 90s. Well, sure. There are always, like, DOSing people or DDoS attacks and shit like that. A bunch of assholes.
Yeah. But I know what you mean, yeah. I feel like Matrix, for what it was, and for its place in pop culture, is very dated.
It's a fucking still amazing movie, obviously.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But is it as good as Mad Max Fury Road?
I'd say no.
No.
I'd say no.
No, I'd say no.
But maybe time will tell. Maybe we could be sitting here 15 years from now, when Filmtastic Voyage is like on number 10,000. We could be sitting here saying, hey, guys, you know what? Fury Road, that was so 20s or whatever,
the
10s.
Teens, 10s. The 2010s.
Yeah, that's so 2010s.
Speaking of which, how ready are you for the Roaring 20s 2?
Well,
I can't wait for the 20s. It's like, we're in the 20s.
You know what?
Techno jazz.
It's right now. It's very hard to predict.
Well, here's what's going to
what
happen.
The 20s will
in the
be
next
like.
4 years, alcohol is going to become illegal again, as we all know.
Yeah.
And then Space Al Capone comes, and then it's going to be the roaring 20s
Space
again.
Space Al Capone. That'd be great.
Yeah. Or we'd probably be like half robot Al Capone.
Yeah.
As played by Robert De Niro.
Oh, yeah. Well, half robot, half alien, and he looks like Robert De Niro.
No, half robot, quarter alien. Quarter Robert De Niro.
Yeah. So Robert De Niro has sex with a...
No, it's just he gets like, it's a surgery thing.
Okay, well, would it be robot Robert De Niro has sex with an alien? Or would it be De Niro has sex with a robot alien?
Well, he's not, no one's getting birth, though. Like, the sex is irrelevant. This is, it's like a lot of Frankensteining, a lot of stitching going on.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Like, it's actually Robert De Niro.
I just want to put him in an awkward situation where he has to... You know, fornicate with a fucking weird...
You know, based on his movie track record, in a movie, I don't think he'd be... If he got paid enough, he'd do that.
He's, yeah, you know, it's interesting with him. He sort of weaves in and out of going off the rails with his roles. Like, I feel like you'll be like, oh, you know what? Robert De Niro's back to, like, doing his thing now. But then right when you think that, he does something like... The Intern or whatever the hell that was, or
yeah,
you know,
that's what it's called.
Meet the Little Fockers or some shit. Yeah,
well, it's weird. It seems like now he's either doing like the movies that he's like starring, like, oh, it's Robert De Niro. Those are like usually either like wacky comedies or low key comedies, like The Intern. And
yeah.
The movies that aren't like that are the more like dramas that no one really cares about because they're not that good. Like, what was like the wedding, something like that.
I forget.
Family Wedding? I don't know.
He was in a Paul Dano movie a little while
ago.
Like
that is that Paul Dano movie where he's like a writer and he's like, there's like a
but
drama.
He's like homeless, right?
That Luc Besson movie where he's a family.
The family, yeah. That was okay.
Like, it's like a lot of like movies aren't bad and he's good in them, but they're a lot of like, they're not like, they're like movies that aren't Oscar movies and not really great dramas either. They're sort of like movies.
I want to see him, I want to see scary Robert De Niro. Like, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of American Hustle, but one of the things I did like in that movie was him.
Oh, he's still great in.
Because he was fucking. Scary
David O. Russell is like the only movies where he's still like, yes.
Yeah.
I think the reason is because I recall hearing that Robert De Niro doesn't like playing angry, mean people.
Really?
Like, I think because he got cast in Mean Streets as the angry guy, but he didn't want that role. He wanted the nice guy role.
Yeah, he wanted Harvey
and
Keitel.
And then he kind of got, not typecast, but he got, because he was really good at it, he got in like Taxi Driver and those kind of roles.
I
and I think that like now that he can do what he wants, he's like, I just want to be the nice guy. I just want to be a nice guy like how I am in real life.
Huh. Well,
that's my theory, at least.
Interesting. Well,
also,
I think
it must be physically taxing. If I was like 70 years old, I wouldn't want to be a mean, angry person. I just be like, I just want to relax.
That's true. You know what? As long as he's doing well.
As long as he voices more sharks in movies.
Oh God.
Nah. He did say recently he wanted to be in a movie with Scorsese to direct him and Leo DiCaprio in a movie together.
He should.
That should be great. They could be cop buddies, Scorsese.
Yeah, as long as it's not Righteous Kill.
No, I don't know. They could be like, they'd probably be father and son or something.
Maybe.
I'm just trying to think.
I mean, that'd be good, but Leonardo DiCaprio as Robert De Niro's son, I wouldn't buy that for a second.
No, I wouldn't.
Yeah. But, you know, they could do something. He should team up again with Scorsese.
You know who I'd buy Leo DiCaprio as Jack Nicholson's son though.
Oh yeah.
Have you seen that? Have you seen that GIF where he does like the perfect impression? Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. They both also got that five head.
What happened to Jack Nicholson? He kind of speaking of Scorsese, he dropped off the radar after Departed.
I've heard some interesting things about him.
Did he just retire? I guess.
I hear, you know, and this might be rumor. I don't know. This might be rumor. That's a big
rumor,
disclaimer.
Rumor.
Someone had mentioned that maybe he has Alzheimer's.
Well,
he has
onset,
he's developed Alzheimer's.
I guess
so.
That,
I don't know.
I hope not, because that sucks.
That would suck, yeah.
What was that thing where Michael Douglas was like, Val Kilmer's got cancer, and Val Kilmer's like, I don't have cancer. I haven't talked to Michael Douglas in like a year.
Oh, God. I want Val Kilmer to make a comeback. That's who I want to make a comeback. He's slimmed down, apparently.
I haven't seen him in a while. He's doing stuff. Like, good for him, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyways, so I think it's about time to, you know, we're going to land on metaphorical planets and stuff.
Hey, guys, pull up your pillows, sit back, relax, maybe have some hot chocolate. We're powering down our journey here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just smooth sailing.
Smooth sailing. Wanna wish everyone a warm, happy holidays and a happy new year. That'll be nice, you know. Everyone having fun with your family and your friends, and snow if you can find it, and if you can't, well, I'm sorry.
We won't be finding any
snow. No, certainly not. Well, anyways, if you haven't heard, we have a website nowadays. I'll give you one guess as to what it's called.
FilmTasticVoyage.com.
Oh, shit, you got it right. Yeah, folks, if you want to check out FilmTasticVoyage.com, it's where all our episodes are. All our episodes will be posted there from now on every Wednesday. Also on the SoundCloud page, you can find them too. Why don't you go ahead, if you like what we've been talking and like what we've been spewing out of our mouths, you can like us on Facebook, or you could follow us on Twitter. We're at FilmTasticCast.
Indeed. Be sure to check us out on iTunes along with the other Let Me Listen podcast productions. You can rate us on iTunes. We thrive off that shit.
Yeah, it sustains us.
It sustains us.
And if you have any comments you want to say, you know, talk to us directly. You can reach us at filmtasticvoyage@gmail.com.
That's right. The Googles. We're set up on the Googles.
The Googles.
So, anyways, folks, we will see you next week on the Filmtastic Voyage. I'm Mike.
I'm Alex, and we're blasting off again.
Goodbye.